Hello, Bedford listeners, and welcome to the Business IQ radio show. I'm Don Byrne, here with my friend and colleague, Andrea Bryan. Hello, Andrea.
Hello, Don.
And we'd like to thank you for listening to WBNH 105.1, broadcasting here out of Bedford, New Hampshire. And thank you, Andrea. Another great show lined up, and I want to let our listeners know that Andrea was the person who was able to engage our two guests who will be joining us very shortly, one on the telephone, one here in person in the studio. In fact, I think I just saw him walk in. But I'll defer to Andrea to talk about our guests in just a few minutes. As we like to do, we'd like to get our housekeeping chores out of the way. First, I'd like to thank the two of you who have sent in messages to us, to our attention on our email account, and encourage you, if you have ideas for shows or topics or any feedback you have for us, please feel free to contact us. You can contact me at dbyrne@thebusinessiqshow.com, and Andrea can be reached at aobryen, that's O-B-R-I-E-N, at thebusinessiqshow.com. Or you can send us a tweet. Our Twitter handle is hashtag TBIQS. And we really would love to hear from you with any suggestions or thoughts. How's your week been so far, Andrea?
Busy, but nice. You know, a lot of yard work.
Yeah, it looks like the weather is scheduled to continue to improve. And here we are just about to reach the unofficial launch of summer here over the weekend, with May 31st looming around the corner on us. So it's been a very nice and delightful winter, a little bit of a slow spring, but I'm optimistic for the summer.
Actually, I would like to highlight one thing that happened this week.
Yes, please do.
I visited the New Hampshire School of Mechanical Trades.
Oh.
With the regional head of SBA.
Where is that located, by the way?
That's located on Perimeter Road in Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
And they started...
Right by the airport, in other
exactly.
words.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They started their business just a few years ago and have now over 1,000 students enrolled.
That's tremendous.
Yeah. The mechanical trades, there's a shortage of mechanical trades in the state and region, and their business is primed to address that shortage, and it's working out really well for them. So I applaud Dean Millard and his partners on that.
Well, that's a perfect lead into one of the two emails we got was asking why I seem to be fascinated by drones, because I've been reporting drone stories all along, and mechanical trades, I think, tie in nicely to my drone story for this week. And I, in fact, do have one. And this story comes from New Hampshire Business Review. It's called Taking Flight. It's an article written by Michael McCord. And it talks about a fellow in Nottingham, New Hampshire, who has turned a former lumberyard into a manufacturing facility for UAVs, unmanned drones. The entrepreneur is Jim Cooper. He's come out of retirement to do this. And these are not toys that he's building. They have an average price of around $20,000 and up. So these are significant bits of technology. And I remember back to, I think, the first drone story I talked about, which was forecasting that drones over the next 15 or 20 years would add almost $500 million to the economy here in New Hampshire. So pretty significant. I'm not talking too much about drones, am I, Andrea?
You do drone on a little bit.
Oh,
but
boy, did I set myself up for that one.
Have you ever flown one?
I have not. I'm looking forward to getting one. The application we have in mind, as you may know, my wife is involved in genealogy, and she's very interested in using it to help survey abandoned cemeteries rather than fight all of the poison ivy and poison oak and other things that are in there, plus the danger of ticks. So we think that technology might be very helpful in helping restore some of the history that's lost when people don't pay attention to their local cemetery. So that's just one very minor use of it, but I know it has a lot of other applications in surveying and else other ones. Related to that, and I don't know, Andrew, if you saw this story as well, but apparently the other people are interested in a different type of drone, not a flying drone, but a driving drone, is Uber. And Uber has announced that they are collaborating with some automobile companies to experiment with having the Uber service delivered by driverless cars.
Oh, wow.
So drones and robotics in the future. You know, we've talked about inviting people from the high school robotics club to come in and talk to us about the future area and how we're really helping to develop entrepreneurs here in Bedford through this really good organization. And I guess they've won some awards and they've gone to some national competitions.
It would be great to hear from families in Bedford that have students maybe involved in robotics at the high school, if they that maybe we could interview a few of the kids.
That's a great idea. If you'd like to write to us, again, this is Don Byrne and Andrea O'Brien broadcasting here on WBNH 105.1 FM. You can reach us at either one of our names, D Byrne, D-B-Y-R-N-E, or Andrea A. O'Brien, A-O-B-R-I-E-N, at thebusinessiqshow.com. And that's a great, great suggestion. Speaking of entrepreneurs, I know we have some interesting entrepreneurs who are, we're going to be talking to in a little while, and I think it has to do with this topic of social venturing. Now, I want to tell you very quickly, I had a tiny little bit of exposure to this as an observer when I was doing my stint down at LSU and observing some of the recovery in New Orleans from Hurricane Katrina and the Deepwater Horizon's crisis. And there were a number of businesses that were set up that had a social agenda. So I'm interested in hearing from our guests a little bit about this, and maybe you have some thoughts on it. But I'll also tell you the interesting thing that I observed was that these businesses organized themselves into like a koretsu, which, you know, is a term the Japanese use for businesses that align with one another. And they built, they began to have a shared infrastructure and a support system. And so a lot of interesting things. And thanks for setting those guests up. What is your take on this social venturing topic?
Well, you know, first comes the mission. And then around the mission, the business is built. So we are going to explore what social entrepreneurship is, you know, and what it takes to start such an entity. It really takes a driving passion, and certainly they have to pay attention to the economics of the business. But
they still have to pay the bills.
They still have to pay the bills, but the business is going to address a social problem that the entrepreneur, the business owner, feels very passionate about. Maybe it's something that's impacted them in their own life. And it cuts across sectors and disciplines, and they really need to bring to bear their set of core values to make it successful.
Well, it sounds like we're going to have two experts here. We'll introduce them more fully in just a minute or two, but as a little bit of a teaser, we've got a award-winning entrepreneur, Dan Carr, who founder of Val Choice, and then one of your colleagues from the university, right?
Yes, Dr. Fiona Wilson, who is really spearheading a lot of the effort in New Hampshire around recognizing social venture innovation.
Well, terrific. And this is Don Byrne and Andrea O'Brien here on WBNH 105.1 FM. And it's time, I think, we should bring on our guest, Andrea. This is a topic that I've been excited to talk to you about. I know you know more about this than I do, but I got a little introduction to the topic of social venture innovation when I was working down with LSU down in New Orleans after Katrina, and there was a number of interesting businesses that started up there, but you're really more expert at that than I am. So why don't you introduce our guest and maybe kick off the discussion?
Thank you, Don. We're here today with two guests, Dr. Fiona Wilson from the Peter Paul College of UNH in Durham, and Bedford business owner Dan Carr, founder of Val Choice. So today's show is on a topic that is and is emerging in the business world, that of social venture and social venture innovation. So I'd like to start by introducing Dr. Wilson. She is the Clinical Associate Professor of Social Innovation, Social Entrepreneurship and Sustainability, and the Executive Director of the Center of Social Innovation and Enterprise at UNH. It is a joint venture between the Carsey Institute and Peter Paul College at UNH. And Dan Carr is the owner and founder of ValChoice, which is a Bedford-based business. Dan,
we always like to hear about Bedford-based businesses, so this is good.
Bedford Community Radio.
Right.
So Dan comes from the tech world and actually worked in Silicon Valley for many years and has moved to New Hampshire about 5 years ago. So we're very interested to hear his story, and particularly his story about his social venture.
So welcome to WBNH, both of you. Thanks for joining us today. Happy to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
I'd like to start by asking Fiona to talk about the center that she leads and how they interact jointly with the Carsey Institute at UNH.
Of course, I'd love to. So, as you mentioned, Andrea, this center is a relatively new center. We just started last year, and it's a joint venture between the Peter T. Paul College of Business and Economics and also the Carsey School of Public Policy. The Carsey Institute was formally renamed as the Carsey School of Public Policy about a couple of years ago now. So the reason that we started this center is for a couple of reasons. One is mostly for our students. We really know that students of this generation really care about having careers that, of course, allow them to provide for themselves and their families. But they're a very motivated generation. They're very aware of the huge number of pressing social and environmental challenges that are facing the world today and that will really be the challenges that their generation are inheriting. And they want to make a difference. And so they want to both do well and do good. So we know our students are really interested in this topic. But we also think as an academic institution that we can contribute on this topic by bringing together thought leaders, people who are leading social ventures, academics who are doing research on social ventures, and others, so that we can really sort of advance this field and allow it to fulfill its promise.
Fiona, what campus is the center located, or is it something that's university-wide? Someone can get involved in this particular program?
Yeah, so we're located on the Durham campus, but we're a joint venture, as I said, between the Paul College of Business and Economics and the Carsey School of Public Policy. And I can explain a little bit more about why that is and how that relates to social innovation in a minute. But we're intentionally a center that really interacts with students across the UNH system. And we intentionally want to interact with the community around on these topics as well.
Terrific. Great.
You know, I first came across this topic, social venture, when there was an event held a few years ago. I believe there was a Nobel Prize winner who was the keynote, and he talked about a microloan fund that he had developed in his country. Fiona, can you tell us a little bit more about how social venture and the challenge has come about, and more about the challenge?
Yeah, of course. So you're referring to Mohamed Yunus, and he won the Nobel Prize for Peace back about 8 years ago or so. He was actually an economist by training, but he won the Nobel Prize for Peace, and for founding the Grameen Bank, and sort of more broadly, his model for the Grameen Bank, which really allowed very small micro loans to be made for the first time to some of the poorest people in the world, to really help them start small businesses and to help them bring themselves out of poverty. That was his innovation with the Grameen Bank. But in the subsequent years, That innovation has really been replicated by many around the world and created the industry that we know today as sort of micro-lending.
Fiona, this is Don. The little bit that I know about this is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but some of the real benefit of this is that women are many times able to secure some funding for starting small businesses in environments that wouldn't necessarily be as friendly or have capital available to them. Am I getting that right?
Yes, definitely. You know, it was really, you know, the innovation that he came up with was really about sort of addressing a sort of a failure in the market, right? So mainstream banks traditionally, you know, historically said it's too risky to lend to the poorest of the poor. And it's not economic for us to lend to the poorest of the poor because the loans that they need, you know, somebody who's a smallholder farmer in Bangladesh, you know, they maybe only need a couple of $100s to allow them to buy a couple of cows. And that's not the sort of economics of that don't work for larger banks, the sort of processing cost to that. And so large banks and mainstream banks didn't lend to that group of people. But Eunice kind of had an insight to say, you know, I know that a loan of $200 can be life-changing for a small entrepreneur in Bangladesh, and I think I can figure out a way to make that viable. So, and you're right, many times the borrowers are women. So his innovation really created access to capital, that kind of capital that, you know, entrepreneurs in America sort of take more for granted in terms of, you know, loans or even equity. He made access to that capital available to that group of marginalized people for the first time.
You know, I went to that first event and it was moving and inspirational. And I would recommend, really, if anyone has an interest in going, it's usually held in October. Is that correct?
It's just before Thanksgiving in November normally. Yeah.
So we will definitely announce that when it gets closer to that time to encourage more interest. But it was very well attended. And what is so amazing about the Social Venture Innovation Challenge, which is the contest that UNH and I'm going to call it the Carsey Institute, but it's could you correct me again?
The Carsey School of Public Policy.
Yes, the Carsey School of Public Policy. It's an incredible event. And Dan was this year's winner of that event. And so I'm wondering, you know, how does the process go for business to participate and... You know, how do they position themselves to...
How do you find each other in some sense, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, so we started the competition 3 years ago. This year will be our fourth year. And we really wanted to create... We do all kinds of events and other work to help grow social venture innovation in the state and beyond. But we really wanted to have this competition or this challenge because we wanted to have a sort of an annual event that would allow... us to, you know, help shine a light on the people in our community who are doing some of these great things or who have ideas for these kinds of organizations. And we wanted to help bring resources to them, visibility and prize money and the other resources they need to really get these ideas off the ground. So we have two tracks. We actually have a community track, and Dan was the first prize winner in the community track, and that track is open to any resident of the state of New Hampshire and any UNH alum. And then we also have a student track, which is open to university students from any college or university in the state of New Hampshire. So two different tracks. You know, we try and spread the word as broadly as we can through college campuses, through professors, through you know, different contacts we have on the different university campuses around the state. And then we try and spread the word about the community track through partner organizations, great organizations like the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, New Hampshire Businesses for Social Responsibility, through Alpha Loft, many other organizations that are in contact with entrepreneurs and change agents around the state.
We're talking today to Dr. Fiona Wilson of UNH and Dan Carr of ValChoice. This is Don Byrne and Andrea O'Brien on WBNH 105.1. And we're talking about social venture innovation. And Dan, how did you find this challenge? How did you discover? How did you meet up with Dr. Wilson and the whole initiative and the challenge, and sort of bring you into the discussion as well?
I actually heard about it word of mouth. So a friend of mine had made me aware of it, and I thought it sounded like such a great idea that I decided I'd proceed forward and put in an application. And the company was preparing to launch a product around that time anyway, so the timing was very good for us.
And by the way, Fiona, can you tell us if people want to learn more about the challenge? Is there a website, or what would they punch into their search engine to find out how to connect with you or the center?
Oh, of course, yeah. So the website for the center is unh.edu/social-innovation. And there's information about all of our different programs, including the New Hampshire Social Venture Innovation Challenge, on that website.
And are you accepting applications for the, what would it be, the 2017 competition now, or?
It'll be for the 2016 event challenge, which will be in the finals will be in November, and we will be opening registrations for that sometime this summer. So we'll be sure to let you know, and appreciate your help in spreading the word.
Yeah, please do. We'll certainly give that some attention here.
Was it a crowded field of contestants?
Yeah, so every year we've had about 75 teams enter the challenge. About 30 of those are in the community track, like Dan, and the rest are student teams. And those 70 teams represent something like 325 or so different people. So it's been great to just see how many people across the state have been excited and have applied for this every year.
Well, it's great to be here with Dan Carr as well, since, as you just mentioned, he's a winner. But I understand he's also a twofer. He just won another award. And so, Dan, can you tell us what other accolades have you added to the wall there at ValChoice?
Oh, thank you, Don. Yeah, we were very fortunate last week. We were chosen as the first place winner of the New Hampshire Startup Challenge, which was sponsored and done by the Manchester Young Professionals Network. It was an excellent program, and we're pleased to have won that also.
Great. So we've been chatting for a little bit, but I'm not sure I fully understand, how does social venture innovation, if that's the proper term, differ from sort of just general innovation? And I don't know if that's a question for Fiona or for Dan or both of you to give us your opinion, or even Andrea, who's has a lot of knowledge in this area. Who'd like to take that one on?
So I'll go ahead and take a stab at that. Social venture is, in a way, a superset of any other type of venture. You still have to develop the product or the service, get the funding and all those things, but there's a mission behind it. And that mission is a social cause. There's a need in our society for something that isn't getting addressed fully or adequately by the current systems that we have in place. And so with a social venture, you take that on as a way to bring a good solution to benefit society.
Can you tell us a little bit about ValChoice and how it came on the horizon?
Yeah, I understand you have a great story, and we'd love to hear a little bit about the background on that.
Yeah, so ValChoice started with me being hit by a car, and I was on a bicycle at the time, and being taken to by ambulance and admitted into an intensive care unit. But ValChoice wasn't in my mind yet at that point. At that point, I just wanted to get well physically. And it wasn't until years later, when I was still trying to recover $100,000 in medical expenses that no insurance company would pay, that I realized that we have a systemic problem that needs to be addressed.
But you were covered by insurance at the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was covered by health insurance, should have been covered by auto insurance of the driver that hit me, as well as my own auto insurance, yes.
And then what happened?
Well, so as that process concluded, I decided that I vowed to myself that I was going to find a way to apply my technology background to solve this problem so that no other family ever experienced the same thing?
I mean, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I know I certainly have experienced frustrations, you know, when you deal with a big company like an insurance company and you really can't get satisfaction, even though you think, you know, what did I do wrong? I paid my premium. So it's probably a topic that many of our listeners have probably shared that same feeling.
It is a serious problem. And just to tie it back to the social venture, where it ties in so closely with social venture is that people that have less education, people that have less income, not only do they pay more for their insurance of certain types like auto insurance, they also are very handicapped, so to speak, in being able to fight back. You know, if they don't get the satisfaction that they deserve, there's not a lot they can do about it. And so that's where this is so closely aligned as a social venture.
So by definition, the people who are involved in doing this, they're really bringing disruptive technology to the marketplace, because you're looking, as you said, to sort of right an injustice, which would imply that it's rather well spread and embedded in society. So this is pretty interesting. You guys are upsetting the apple cart. Are you known as an apple cart upsetter, Fiona? Is that what your students are motivated by?
That's my reputation for sure.
By the way,
I think just to build on what Dan was saying, you know, that social ventures have a very explicit sort of social purpose, right? The primary purpose is not about sort of individual financial gain, as it is with kind of classic entrepreneurship, but more about driving some kind of social or environmental change. And I think the most powerful social venture models are like Dan's, which they use in this sort of harnessing the mechanism of the marketplace, right? I mean, I think historically we've thought about, we've got, you know, for-profit businesses and their goal is to make money for their shareholders. And then we have sort of non-profit organizations or NGOs. And their mission is to sort of to address a social issue or an environmental issue. And I think what organizations like Dan's are showing is that we're starting to see these hybrid organizations. They kind of look more like a business, and that they're, you know, participating in the marketplace, and in Dan's case, sort of in the insurance industry, and they're trying to sort of help change that industry from the inside.
Right. So this is not as I initially thought. These are not all nonprofit. You're a for-profit operation, Dan. So you have the same sort of requirements and governance drivers in terms of your business and your stakeholders and your shareholders and things of that nature. I'm wondering, so who's attracted to work in a company like this? Do you find that your employees are a different type of employee? Do they tend to share the mission? Do they tend to be more socially active and responsible?
I wouldn't say they're a different type of employee. I'd say they're more wedded to what they do. They believe really strongly in what they do. You know, when we look for people, we still need to meet the technical requirements and, you know, have the experience and things like that any other industry needs. But there's something bigger than the quarterly profit or the stock price or the potential IPO. There's something that's more meaningful that a lot of people really associate themselves with or identify with. That's a tremendous and very powerful motivator.
Fiona, do you think this is a trend that we're seeing in business? And do you, from your vantage point, do you think it's generational? In that the baby boomers are more concerned about price and less concerned about mission, and that the millennials are more concerned about doing business with somebody who has a mission?
I think this is a trend that's been or a phenomenon that has been emerging for a couple of decades now, going back, 20 or 30 years. But I think we're only just starting to see and hear more about it. You know, Muhammad Yunus that we were talking about earlier, you know, he was working 25 years ago, 30 years ago. But I think what you're starting to see now is a lot more light being shone on these examples and a lot more of a critical mass. So you're starting to see, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of social entrepreneurs working all around the world in all kinds of different fields, in healthcare and access to education and disruptive technologies. And so I think we're starting to see a lot and see and hear a lot more about it. And I think it's also, you know, we're going to see more of it in the future, partly because of what I was saying about millennials and the kind of careers that they want in the future. But also, frankly, because, you know, our world needs it. And I think many people, much smarter than me, you know, are coming to the conclusion that we need different solutions to tackle the kinds of problems we face in the world at scale. And I think, you know, one of the things we know about the business models and the sort of the marketplace is that they can create change at the scale we need it to, in scale and the speed at which we need it to happen. So I think we're going to see more and more of it. You know, there's a lot of great things happening. There's new legislation being passed in many states around the country, including in New Hampshire just last year, to create these kind of hybrid organizations called benefit corporations. That was passed by the New Hampshire legislature when it was effective January 1 of this year. So I think we're going to just see more and more of it as the years go on.
Andrea, I'd like to just add a little bit to that. I think one of the reasons we're seeing it with millennials is partially because the university systems are encouraging it, but also a career is a greenfield for a millennial. They can do whatever they want. And as people age into their career, a lot of times they get stuck. And I talk to a lot of people, they would love to love what they do, but they don't. And sure. So the opportunity to join a social innovation or a socially disruptive company is very enticing to people of any age.
It gives them more meaning. And that they have an opportunity to make an impact
exactly.
for the community.
So I guess a question for both Dan and you, Fiona. What about the traditional funding sources? Are they coming to the table? Are banks and venture capitalists and angel investors, are you seeing a movement among them to be willing to invest? And because the value proposition in some sense is different, I would think, in terms of how you present this to them. I mean, if we look at the valuation of companies like Twitter and Facebook and eBay and some of those, we know that it's not their tangible assets. It's really their goodwill. And it sounds like you folks are all about really, you know, goodwill on steroids here in terms of what your brand could mean and the value that the market would place to that. So I'm wondering, how are you seeing the reaction of the traditional sort of funding and the capital markets for mm-hmm. businesses like this?
Should I go first, Dan, and then you can jump in and talk about the perspective of an individual entrepreneur?
Sure, go ahead.
So I think, you know, at a big picture level, we're starting to see a lot more interest in this. I mean, I think the mind shift that had to occur was that there are different kinds of value, right? And traditionally, the investment community has thought about the creation of financial value or economic wealth. And when we think about social ventures, we really have to think not just about financial wealth, but also about social and environmental value as well. We're starting to see more investors who are interested in a blend of all three of those kinds of value creations. I would say today, you know, the pool of that money is small but growing fast. We definitely need more investors who are willing to come in and value that sort of triple bottom line return. You know, we also know that oftentimes these kinds of social ventures need a longer runway. And so we need investors who can be patient capital investors. But we're seeing some great signs. You know, it's often called the world of impact investing. There's a lot of talk and a lot of work going on right now in that sort of impact investing world. And some of the major, you know, corporations, Wall Street, banks and others are really engaged in impact investing. So I think it's going in the right direction for sure. You know, does it mean that an entrepreneur like Dan has available capital when he needs it? Not always. Maybe you can talk to that, Dan, about how you're experiencing it on the ground.
Yeah, so I agree. The availability of funds is improving. I think a lot of times that availability is within kind of an investment thesis, like clean energy or something like that, where people say, I identify with this, I want to invest in that space, and they have their metrics by which they invest. I think for people outside of where there's a clear investment thesis, it's harder. It's not as easy to raise capital. And it really comes down to the entrepreneur probably has to be even better at telling the story, because they have to find a way to get that potential investor to love the story, or they have to be able to conform with the financial metrics that they're going to be measured by of every other industry. And so it's not easy. I would say overall it's more challenging for the entrepreneur.
I wonder if in Europe or other countries, if the banking world or the investment world is more drawn to businesses that have this strong mission at their core. Fiona, can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, this work is definitely a little bit more advanced in Europe, but I think the U.S. is catching up fast. So I think that's the good news.
You're listening to WBNH 105.1, Bedford Community Radio, and our guests today are Dr. Fiona Wilson, Associate Professor of Social Innovation. She's the Executive Director of the Center for Social Innovation and Enterprise in partnership with the Carsey School of Public Policy at UNH, the Peter T. Paul College in Durham, and Dan Carr, owner and founder of ValChoice, which is a Bedford-based business, a social venture. And Dan is an award winner. He won this year's Social Venture Innovation Challenge for the community track, and also has won other business awards in the state.
Dan, we've talked a little bit about ValChoice, but I'm not sure we know exactly what it does. Can you tell us what ValChoice does?
Sure, yeah. We're an analytics company, so we collect millions of data points, and we summarize how good insurance coverage is based on three things. How good is the price? How good is the protection that it provides? And does it offer the service that people expect and deserve?
Now, is that life or property and casualty, or what type of insurance?
Yes, we've started with property casualty. The service that we have available today is for automobile.
Oh, good.
And we'll expand into other forms of insurance as time goes by.
So you're a big data person.
Yes.
We're coming up on some time here. I know that Dr. Wilson has some limited time. I guess what we'll do is we'll ask, Fiona, do you have any closing comments? Because I really want to thank you for your time you gave us today. And I know that you gave us some guidelines in terms of when it was you needed to sign off. But perhaps some closing comments if people wanted to find out more. And I'm also curious, is this tracked part of your undergraduate or graduate programs at the university?
Well, thanks, Dan. And Dan, it's always wonderful to speak to you. And congratulations again on being a winner last year. And thank you to both of you for hosting this show and inviting me on. It's been great to have the chance to chat a little bit. We really encourage the community. The UNH has always been part of our mission, is about how do we take the knowledge and the resources of the university and help them impact the community. And so we'd love to hear from organizations in the state who are doing this kind of innovative social venture work. So please reach out to me. My contact information is on our website that we talked about earlier, which is unh.edu/social-innovation. And there's another part to your question, and I can't remember what it was.
I was asking, is this an undergraduate, graduate, or who are attending this program? What's the makeup of your demographics there?
Yeah, so we have a number of different programs, but the Social Venture Innovation Challenge that we're talking about mostly today, we have graduate and undergrad students. In fact, the winner of the student track last year was a graduate student from Manchester, and in prior years, the winners have been undergrad students. So it's a really great mix. It's a bunch of different students from probably like 25 different majors across campus. We have business students and engineers, social work students and liberal arts students. So it's a really wonderful sort of melting pot of different students at different levels with all kinds of different backgrounds that they bring to the table.
Fiona, thank you so much again for making the time to speak with us today. We would love to have you back again to talk about other topics that the college is involved in and that you're involved in. So hopefully we can do that soon.
Well, I would love to do that. And thank you again. It's truly been my pleasure. So thank you.
Thank you as well.
Take care. Bye-bye.
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 So, Dan, you're saying that you're primarily an analytics company, so you're part of this big data movement that we are all hearing about and reading quite a lot about. What caused you to get, how is it you chose this particular area? Was the information more readily available? It still has to be challenging for you to be gathering up this kind of data from all of the different companies to put this together, I would assume.
Yeah, the information wasn't readily available, and that's part of what makes it challenging. So I spent a fair amount of time trying to figure out where to get the information from, how to get the information, and then how to architect the system and glean what consumers need to know from the information that's available.
So you're connecting the dots and saying the following indicators are something that tell me about the behavior and really, I think I'm guessing the name of your company is that you're helping them make a very much of a value-based decision in terms of the analytics that you're going through, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So it's, if you think about how people buy insurance, there's a couple of ways. One is they use who their parents used, or they use who their friends use, or they like an advertisement on TV. And for something that's protecting our financial future, whether it's your children's college education or your retirement fund, that's crazy to make decisions based on those inputs. So it's a numbers industry, right? Insurance is completely based on numbers. So it's just a matter of putting the numbers together and figuring out how to extract from that what is the real performance of these companies and share it with consumers. And we do that on a free basis. So we provide a summary report for any consumer in America that wants one, free.
How can our listening audience contact you if they, want to utilize your service or just know more about your experience in starting a social venture?
Sure. Yeah. The website is the best way. If somebody wants a report, if they want to come claim their free report, just valchoice.com. And it, right on the homepage, it'll guide you through how to get the free report.
I'll be doing that tonight when we finish here, I promise you.
Good. And if somebody wants to contact me, go down to the footer of any page, and it says contact us, and there's a form on there where somebody can just send an email, and it'll come directly to me.
And I think if people want to learn more about your story, I understand that you've written a book about this that provides a good backdrop.
I have.
So why don't you tell us a little about that, and where can they get the book?
So the book is called Injured Money. It's available on Amazon. Through the Amazon store, and injured money because I did end up recovering the money, but in the process, it's like everybody got injured in the process is kind of how it seemed.
So a double and triple entendre here, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's the story of what can happen when you think you're fully insured and things just don't go right.
Yeah, certainly a very hot and topical issue for everybody, especially with all of the discussion around the new Affordable Health Care Act that's out there. So very, very topical. I'm wondering in terms of your general experience in terms of value, looking at the value-based approach of social venture innovation, you're really leading a social charge. I mean, I think it's going to be fascinating in a couple of years now. There may be a whole cultural shift, a whole social shift in terms of how people view things because of work that of such as ValChoice and other companies that are saying, hey, let's re-examine these institutions and let's really hold their feet to the fire by looking at them, sort of pulling back the curtain and seeing what's going on underneath. Because that's what I get the impression you're telling me your analytics let us do. We can actually find out some information that has sort of been hidden from us before.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the whole purpose of this. Transparency always wins. You know, if you look at every industry, I mean, transparency is kind of over time creeping into every single industry, but it never gets set back and becomes unstoppable. It always wins for so many reasons. One is consumers are demanding it. Another is that technology enables it. And the third reason, which is just as powerful, probably more powerful than the others, is there are people in the industry that benefit from it. from it. So no matter what that, no matter how reticent any industry is to try and avoid transparency, the ones that benefit will adopt. And then, you know, the cows are out of the barn, so to speak.
Yeah, it's the old saying, the first person has a competitive choice. For everybody else, it's the cost of doing business. I mean, getting an advantage in just the cost of doing business.
It changes the competitive landscape.
Yeah, right. Terrific.
So has the industry embraced your effort here with ValChoice, or have you received any nasty emails?
Yeah. Are you the man of the year in Hartford or not?
I don't think Hartford has a man of the year, and I probably wouldn't be the top of the list. hopefully on the list. We're relatively new in our market engagement, and the way we're going to market, think of us like Carfax. So when you think about Carfax, Carfax went out and they started with consumers. And actually, Forbes calls us Carfax for insurance. We're very similar. So you think of Carfax, what does it do? It lets you know if the used car you're buying is any good before you buy it. And what we do is let you know if your insurance is any good before you need it. So it's very similar. And in the business model, we're starting with consumers. We're engaging insurance companies and insurance agents now, and we will be rolling that out as well. It's the same underlying technology, but it's a different interface that they use. And I expect that they will take their time, right? It's not a fast-moving industry. They'll want to really vet it and make sure they understand it. But without doubt, there will be people that adopt it. And I've had glowing reviews from various people that have told me about how much this could help them win in the market, and regulators that love it because they see it benefits consumers. So it'll take time, but it will become a big wave.
So you're listening to WBNH 105.1. Don Byrne, Andrea O'Brien, and our guest today, Dan Carr, who is president, founder, CEO as well, mm-hmm. of ValChoice. And I'm sorry, I think I stepped on you, Andrea. I think you were going to ask a question.
I was going to ask him more about the regulators and how that discussion has gone, and how they're approaching the service you provide, and how it kind of bumps up into what they might consider maybe their turf. Not that you're regulating, but from a consumer point of view, the regulators are kind of there to protect the consumer, I think. I mean, I don't have any special insight into this market, so I'm wondering what the regulators are saying.
Yeah, most of the regulators only have one concern, and that concern is, are you selling insurance? Do you need to be licensed to sell insurance? And the answer to that is absolutely not. We don't sell insurance. What we do is we grade companies. So in most cases, there's really no interaction or no need for interaction. But there are some that really want to do a good job of servicing that consumer, and there's a number of ways they can use the technology we've developed to do that. Not necessarily in the form that it exists today, but ways to, I won't get into all the details here because it gets too technical, but ways that help them identify who's doing a good job, who isn't doing a good job, and how do they try and help their consumers make better choices and let the competitive market provide some of the regulatory effect.
Very interesting. Let me shift the discussion a little bit and ask you about your experience in terms of starting this type of business in New Hampshire. I mean, did you find New Hampshire to be business friendly to this type of a business? And certainly you can compare and contrast this with our friends out on the other coast, since you lived out there in Silicon Valley for a while, and I'm sure had to fight all that crazy traffic where people leave at 2 o'clock in the morning to meet a different work shift and things like that. So
I have found New Hampshire to be tremendously very, very friendly. I've been thrilled with it, and for a number of reasons. So the Social Venture Challenge being one, it was such a good fit for the company. And then we followed that on. We were accepted into the Alpha Loft. They call it the Accelerate New Hampshire Accelerator, which has been some great coaching and introductions to other people. And then this other award that we won last week. So there's kind of a startup ecosystem here of people that really want to see technology companies succeed. And we've been a beneficiary of that in a very big way. So that's been good. But also what is good is that to try and start a company in Silicon Valley now takes a lot of money. And the cost of living is so high. You know, a house that's $500,000 here would be $2 million there. And so you have to pay people a lot of money. And that runs your startup costs up just exponentially, because labor is the biggest cost.
And one of your largest risks in the beginning.
And a big risk, exactly. And so now you can actually, the tables are shifting a little bit. You can actually start a company outside of Silicon Valley much more effectively from a capital point of view. But the other thing that a lot of people don't realize is the venture capitalists out there aren't making the early stage investments that they used to do. They're really waiting to see startups prove that they have traction in the market. And so if they're not willing to take the risk to fund the company when it really needs the money most, there's no reason to be there other than the infrastructure that's already in place. And I would say that New Hampshire is building that infrastructure.
So the other question that follows on to that, what is the exit strategy for a company in this field? Is it the same? Are you looking at, you know, an IPO at some point in time or an M&A? Of course, you always talk about an IPO because that's how you always position yourself. But, I mean, is that a realistic approach? And have other companies in this field, are there some success stories we can point to?
That's an interesting question because the topic we talked about earlier about people feeling differently about their job when they work in a social venture, this is one of the first jobs I've ever had where I never think about what it could mean in money. It just doesn't matter to me. You know, I used to always think about that. When my years in Silicon Valley.
By the way, for our listeners, he's smiling as he's saying this. He really believes this, so.
It's true. People sometimes will pose kind of a fictional question. Would you sell for this much money? It's like, but would this keep going? You know, it becomes part of you and the mission that you're trying to accomplish. And that's really more important than the money. So I don't know how to answer that question. Time will have to tell.
So who are some of the other firms that are there other household names? You mentioned Carfax. I know from my time being on the board down at St. Joe's Hospital, that there's a movement afoot to rate hospitals in terms of and this whole outcome-based medicine approaches out there. Sounds like it's a little bit similar in terms of the movement. They put some analytics up and they begin to compare and contrast. And any kind of benchmarking mm-hmm. is always helpful because it leads to competition and competition leads to better prices. But, you know, are there some names or companies that we might recognize that come to mind?
There's not anything like this in insurance yet. So the way this has historically been done in insurance is with user surveys. With organizations like Consumer Reports and J.D. Power. But those are very limited in terms of what they offer because these insurance companies are structured with a lot of companies underneath them. And that structure is intentional because those companies have different objectives. They take on different levels of risk and operate differently. So when we do user surveys, they don't take that into account. The user surveys look at a brand name. And they also don't look at the differences in how these companies operate from state to state. And so, in effect, people are getting information that they think is helping them make a decision that's basically meaningless. And so we're taking it to the next level. As you say, big data, we're using analytics to really give consumers a clear picture of what it is they're buying into.
Very interesting. What's next for ValChoice?
What's next? Haha. We just continue to work to make the product and service as good as it can possibly
expand
be.
Outside of the automobile area, I would assume.
Absolutely. So we've announced plans to expand into the home insurance space, and we will continue to expand into other lines of business as the market demands it. And we'll see how our market reception is. Right now we're focused on making what we're doing today successful. We have literally hundreds of millions of consumers out there that we want to serve. And that's objective number one.
When you talk to some old friends from Silicon Valley or other business acquaintances and you start talking about, you said just a minute ago, money isn't really the driving force here. Do they look at you like something happened in the car accident, something, you know, or do you have to explain yourself about some of these philosophies?
What I've found is it's inexplicable. People think you're crazy. And I think most of the people I've known from my past think I've gone completely off the deep end. So,
well, I for one think that this, you know, is a very valuable service that your company provides. And
yeah, it really, I wouldn't say you're crazy. I think you're really leading a charge in. You're one of these pioneers, you know, the arrow's in your back, but you're leading the charge. And, you know, from what we heard from Dr. Wilson, I mean, this is a sea change occurring, a whole culture shift in the fabric of our society in terms of the infrastructure, and it's quite exciting.
You know, I went to a conference last week. It was the New Hampshire Businesses for Social Responsibility. Did mm-hmm. you attend, Dan?
I didn't, no.
Well, let me tell you, the guest speaker said this: no longer do you have a business with a mission. You have a mission, and therefore you have a business.
Well, we've come to the time we have to begin saying goodbye to you, Dan. And this is fascinating. We'd like to have you back. I can imagine a panel on this discussion in sometime in the future. And we have some exciting plans for the show that we can tell you about. And certainly for our listeners, if please give us feedback. You heard from the beginning of the show how to contact us in terms of the website or a Twitter feed, and give us advice. And please give us feedback on what you think. But this is the part of the this is time in the show when I turn it over to Andrea to get our quotes out and to lead us to the sign off. So, Dan, thank you very much for being here. And over to you, Andrea, on WBNH 105.1.
So we wrap up the show with a business quote of the day. And we always ask our guests to reach into the big pot here and pull one out and continue to educate us via famous quote.
He's swimming through a bunch of them here. We've got the steel pot moved aside and looks like he's selected one. Over to you, Dan.
I've learned that people will forget what you said, people forget what you did, but will never forget how you made them feel.
Well, that's quite apropos. Very well done. Well, Dan, thank you very much. Like to sign off. Any parting words? And once again, just tell us what your website is if people want to reach out to you.
Website is valchoice.com, spelled valchoice.com. And everybody, please go claim your free report. That's what it's there for. And Andrea and Don, thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. We really loved having you.
All righty. And this is Don Byrne and Andrea O'Brien here at WBNH 105.1, signing off. And Andrea, I will see you next week. Please do write into us, give us your feedback, come to the website, and you'll be hearing a lot more about some new exciting opportunities in the near future, including being able to listen to podcast versions of the shows. I know if you can't get enough on the first pass, you're going to want to go back and hear it again, and this is one of those shows you'd want to do that too. So thanks very much, and Andrea, I will see you next week.
Don, I will see you next week, and I want our listening audience to remember, you can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.